starting in verse 13. Now, when Jesus had heard about the death of John the Baptist, he withdrew from where he was in a boat to a deserted place by himself. But when the crowds heard it, they followed him on foot from the towns. And when he went ashore, he saw a great multitude, and he had compassion for them and cured their sick. When it was evening, the disciples came and said to him, "This is a deserted place, and the hour is late. Send the crowds away so they may go into the villages and buy food for themselves." And Jesus said to them, "They need not go away. You give them something to eat." And they replied, "We have nothing here but 5 loaves and 2 fish. And he said, "Bring them here to me." Then he ordered the crowds to sit in the grass, and taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven and blessed and broke the loaves and gave them to the disciples. And the disciples gave them to the crowds. And all ate and were filled. And they took up what was left over of the broken pieces, 12 baskets full. And those who ate were about 5,000 men, besides the women and children. Let's pray. Oh God, you are our God, and we earnestly seek you. We are hungry and thirsty, O Lord, fill us. We are anxious and restless, O Lord, calm us. We are sick and in danger, O Lord, heal us. We are pressed in on every side, O Lord. Grant us peace. In this time, Father, I ask that you show us the gospel of your Son, Jesus Christ. Give us a clear vision and understanding that we may see the future you have prepared for us. Give us eyes to see and ears to hear the message of grace you have sent. Speak through me, O Lord, and allow the good news to be proclaimed. In the name of your Son, I pray. Amen. There is a problem. In fact, there are several problems, really. First of all, it is clear that Jesus wanted to be alone. He purposefully went across the lake to be rid of the crowds. It's understandable, right? It's taxing being around all those needy people, the crowds that press in on him day after day after day. They always want. They want to touch him. They want to talk to him. They want to listen to his parables. The sheer enormity of their neediness is exhausting, even to the disciples. Then there are the groups, all the ones vying for their piece of him. The zealots want him to be a revolutionary, to take up arms against Rome and battle like King David of old. Free them from oppression. The Essenes want him to be a desert prophet like Elijah or the Baptist. Someone calling people out of the cities, away from the press of civilization, to the purity of the wilderness. The Sadducees would just be satisfied with his silence, particularly around the subjects like resurrection from the dead. The Pharisees just want him gone. And so Jesus needs a break. And who can blame him? And so a short boat ride, a peaceful wind at their backs, the sound of the waves lapping at the boat, it's a start. But inevitably, they follow him, the hordes. the people who want him and need him, who are starved for his attention. And why shouldn't they? Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest, he said. And so they have come. And Jesus does what he always does. He gives. Their devotion inspires his compassion, and so he heals the sick. He tells them stories, he teaches, he talks, and he does it all day long. Despite needing a break and clearly wanting one, Jesus works for the rest of the day for them. But it's late now. The sun is dipping low in the sky. The temperature is dropping. And suddenly a sense of unease begins to build. A realization that this is the middle of nowhere has set in. And the crowds are getting edgy. There are no towns nearby. No markets or convenience stores. Who knew they were going to be out there for so long? But Jesus is just so magnetic. And when he speaks, time just seems to disappear. But bodies are still bodies, and even the disciples, it seems, have heard the grumbling of stomachs, the whine of children, the restlessness of the people. Some have started to talk, and word reaches the front of the multitude. People are hungry. And you can almost imagine the disciples, as they discussed the issue, probably argued with each other a bit. We got to do something, says Peter. They came out here for him. Matthew shakes his head a little bit. True, but they should have known better. What did they think? The desert is full of food? That their journey would be a quick trip? Andrew pipes up, looking at Matthew. Exactly. We can't live on locusts and honey, like the Baptist does. Still, Peter continues. We can't let them starve, and they won't go as long as Jesus is here. Philip nods in agreement. I heard a few of them saying they would go without food, that they're here for a revolution. And that fasting is a sign of faith. Peter shakes his head in frustration. Sure, some can do that, but not everybody. What about the children, the lame, the elderly? And Thomas speaks up gruffly. Regardless, what can we do? We can't feed them all. We've barely enough for ourselves. The disciples must have been slightly bewildered by the crowd's attitude, following Jesus out to the desert totally unprepared. But who can blame them, really? Their world was not an easy one. They lived under the shadow of an oppressive government who taxed them heavily, quartered soldiers in their holy places, and generally treated them like outsiders in their own land. Everywhere they looked were signs that Rome was in control, and the Jews were second-class citizens. The rulers were Romans, the soldiers were Romans, the law were Roman. And their own people made things worse. Sure, if you were a Herodian or a Sadducee, top 1% of society, you probably had a pretty good life. Or maybe if you lived out of the way of the major cities, in towns like Nazareth or Nain or even Bethlehem, you might be able to eke out a respectable existence. But then the zealots live out there, don't they? Extremists, racial purity types who only want to manipulate and recruit more to their violent way of life. The Essene prophets, too, also live out there, calling people away into the desert to monastic lifestyles, awaiting the destruction of the world. Then there are the so-called messiahs, wannabe David-like characters who often did more harm than good and whose rebellious rhetoric brought down swift, violent Roman response. In short, Judean life was hard. There's little to look forward to, no hope on which to cling, no expectation to wait for. And these crowds, they're like sheep. And the hardness of life has pressed them in. They don't just follow Jesus, they cling to him. Like sheep, they flock to him with little regard to their own well-being, some so desperate for a bit of good news that they would follow the wind if it gave them hope. And desperate people don't think straight. Desperate people drop all they have for a whisper of hope. Desperate people walk into the desert without a plan. Desperate people forget to bring food on a long journey. And for obvious and very pressing reasons, this is a problem. But it is not a problem that we are immune to either. Our world is not so different from theirs. Things haven't changed that much in 2,000 years. Like the Jews of ancient Israel, we also suffer under regimes of power. It exists all around us, oftentimes overt, bold, right in our face. We are no strangers to this kind of power. It yells at us from the TV in the form of political analysts, news anchors, social commentators, talking heads that deny us the right to our own opinions, demand our allegiance, and cry, "Traitor," to any who dissent. This is the power of the world that holds the weapons, the money, and the microphone. Constantly pull and push the levers that control our lives in an attempt to make us acquiesce. This is a fearsome regime of power, but it is not new to us. Whether it was Babylon and Rome in the ancient world, Britain during the Revolutionary War, France under Napoleon, Nazi Germany, the Soviet Union, North Korea, Russia. The list is endless and timeless. None of us are strangers to it. And with these comes regimes of power even closer to home. Like the Sadducees, the Pharisees, Essenes, even the Zealots, our own time is full of groups who seek our allegiance only so we might fight for their cause. The most obvious today is political. One look at the news headlines should rightfully make us all despair over the state of intellectual discourse in this country. Our own president cannot utter a sentence without the next one being laced with cringeworthy curses, bigotry, hatred that ill befits a leader of our country. Democrats and Republicans hurl invectives at one another like grenades in the trenches of World War I, hoping to cause as much damage as possible and celebrating even an inch of ground, regardless of the cost. The stability of the United States doesn't look that different from the Roman world of the first century. People pour in from the outside, looking for work, filling the job market. Border states like Arizona and Texas are divided, with couples and families and churches split about what to do about the unstemmed flow of people crossing over. Ideologies clash right in front of us, raising their voices so that we are forced to deal with them. Whether it's climate control, separation of migrant families, Roe v. Wade, with the rising wage disparity in this country. On all sides, we are buffeted by conflicts we never sought out, attacked by foes we never knew we had. The Middle East is no better. It's a perpetual conflict. Saudi Arabia lobs missiles after missile at its neighbors. Iran teases nuclear armament. These things, the debt crisis, overseas troubles, military strategy, are in many ways struggles that lie beyond the ordinary person. Who among us knows the ins and outs of the economic debate in our own country, much less the foreign dynamics at play? For us, though, hope is far off in some distant place where Congress actually works, where families have enough to survive, where the sick receive the care they need. In many ways, the people of this world are desperate. We are desperate for stability in countries where job loss is common, desperate for the funds to keep families afloat, to keep starving children fed and sick people healthy, desperate for justice, to keep tyrants out of power and give the marginalized a voice, desperate for meaning and some end to madness. For a time when we can look back and interpret all of this as some sort of grand design to make our lives more complete, more enlightened, more peaceful. No, we are not different from those crowds that followed Jesus into the desert. We too look for something to latch on to. We search for some piece of hope. We too seek some light in the darkness that might lead us out of the anxiety that overwhelms us, to fill the hole that exists in our world, in our nation, in our churches, in our relationships, even in our very selves. Something, anything, to guide us away from the foreboding that looms. A foreboding that probably loomed over the disciples who finally went to Jesus to solve their problem. "Master," Peter says, "it's getting late. And the people, they don't have any food. Why don't you send them away to get food for themselves? Then they can eat and be filled." It is an appeal for the people, but also for the sake of Jesus himself. The disciples must have sensed that he was fatigued. Why go out to a deserted place all by yourself? So the request is simple and reasonable. Send them away. Just send them away. The crowds are fatigued, Jesus. Send them away. The people are hungry and thirsty, Jesus. Send them away. They want more than you can give, Jesus. Send them away. You need your rest, Jesus. Send them away. You cannot help them anymore, Lord. Send them away. You have given enough. Send them away. It echoes into the silence. As Jesus gazed out over the crowds, those desperate, anxious people who followed him so recklessly. "Let them stay. You feed them." Absurd to ask any 12 people to feed 5,000 what they could carry on their backs. So the disciples are ready with their answer. "We don't have enough." You can imagine the people towards the front of the crowds who might have been observing this exchange, waiting in anticipation. When Jesus says, "Let them stay," the disciples might have been worried, but the people watching must have felt a jump of delight. Perhaps we can call it hope. "Let them stay," says Jesus, blessing the meager meal of 5 loaves and 2 fish as the disciples bow their heads in prayer. "Let them stay," says Jesus, and the crowd, grown restless from hunger and apprehension, begins to quiet. "Let them stay," says Jesus, and a murmur of expectation rolls through the 5,000 gathered there. "Let them stay," says Jesus. The baskets are passed, and the people begin to take and eat. "Let them stay," and those who are burdened finally find rest. "Let them stay." Anxiety, tension drift away. The disciples relax. The people relax. Everyone is filled. It's more than just food, too, isn't it? Sure, food is what filled the bellies of those people gathered there, bread and fish that multiplied and multiplied, sustained the needs of the crowds, the disciples, and probably even Jesus. But it was more than just food that filled those gathered there that day. Jesus filled something else. For the disciples, Jesus fills their doubt. "How can we provide for these people?" they ask him. It's a good question. And Jesus answers it twice. Physically, Jesus feeds the disciples, but he also gives them baskets of food at the end. 12 in all. One for each disciple. Do you see the truth of it? The hand of God working here? The disciples are filled now, but they're also given food with which to feed others. For the crowds, Jesus quiets and fills their anxiety. In a restless world where tyrants rule, the rich grow richer, and the average person barely scrapes by, Jesus offers abundance to all who are in need. He heals the sick and those in pain. He feeds the hungry, those whose bellies ache. And he provides a place of rest, a deserted place where Rome, the Pharisees, the zealots, the tyrants of the world will not come. A place where the rich have no wealth and despots will not disturb them. This is the Jesus they have come to see. This is the Jesus that they cling to in the desert, the one who they are so desperately hoped that they forgot to pack provisions, the one whom they have so eagerly waited for that they walked this path without realizing the precarious nature of the journey. Jesus, this Jesus, gives hope to the broken. This Jesus casts a vision for the future. This Jesus provides rest and peace in the chaos. This Jesus feeds them when they're hungry. And for them, this is good news. The mystery. The bread and the fish, we think, how fantastic it must have been to be there, to see Jesus face to face. What must we have looked like or sounded like? Would his words have touched me personally? Would he have been as irresistible to me as to the crowds? We are full of such questions. The miracles of Christ always have this really fascination with us that threatens to leave the pages of the Bible and enter our reality. Walking on water, multiplying bread and fish, turning water to wine, raising Lazarus from the dead, all of these and more. But we live now. Now has its own issues, right? What would bread and fish for 5,000 do for a billion who are in financial crisis? How would a few loaves reunite an immigrant family separated over thousands of miles? Or save a family who's a month away from bankruptcy? How would Jesus stifle the pain caused by an ineffectual government, political lockouts, layoffs at the factory, a trade war that makes life harder on everyone, or a million other things that threaten to overwhelm us every single day? And yet Jesus summons echo in the back of our heads. Come to me, all of you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Adrift in a world where countless troubles vie for our attention, Jesus' call is peace. The crowds will come. They must come. Because even today, the message of Jesus is irresistible. He gives rest. In a world of anxiety, Jesus releases tension. The crowds search for Jesus even when they do not know what they're searching for. Maybe it's an ideal. Maybe it's a tribe or a community. Maybe it is just simply peace. Because even today, where instability is rife, economic downturn is just around the corner, and where the wealthy hoard riches and power, Jesus' message is peace, rest, and abundant life. Because even today, when we are confronted by the brokenness of governmental systems, the ineffectual nature of human organizations, and the horror of war, Jesus' message is peace, rest, and abundant life. Because even today, when churches crumble under the weight of sin, communities collapse because of listlessness, and tyrannical power erodes our confidence, Jesus' message is peace, rest, an abundant life. No, church, we are not a group of 5,000 Judeans for whom Jesus provides bread and fish. We live in a different world with different technologies, lifestyles, experiences. But despite the separation of space and time, despite the vast cultural gap that separates our experience from theirs, we are not so different from those 5,000 that desperately followed Jesus into the desert. We too are hungry. Perhaps not for food, mere bread and fish, but we are empty all the same. Our own desperation for Jesus is experienced in a myriad of ways, both personal and communal. But whatever it is, whatever hole consumes us, whatever void gapes in the center of our being, whatever hunger we have, he is not that far away. Just a short journey into the wilderness, a deserted place where Jesus waits to heal our wounds, fill our emptiness, and give us peace. That, brothers and sisters, is the gospel of Jesus Christ. And it is good news.